Got car trouble?
Hold on to your lug nuts. It's time for an overhaul.
Now's the time to talk with Jerry on the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show.
Well, if you're one of the millions who own one of them gas-drinking, piston-clanking, air-polluting, smoke-belching four-wheel buggies from Detroit City, then pay attention. I'm about to sing your song, son.
Good morning, Southern Arizona, and the rest of you out there in cyberspace, coast to coast, world to world.
There's 101 countries. Do you know that? I didn't know that until I started looking. 101 countries out there. Most of them, I don't think, have the ability to pull this show in, though.
It's streaming now. I think they do.
Let me tell everybody who this is. I'm Jerry Simmons, the host of the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show right here on ESPNTucson.com. And a person who is gracing my presence this morning is Mr. Javier from Spectrum Ina Road Auto Collision.
Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. Oh, and I haven't even had my first cup of coffee yet.
Right.
We're the way we do the show. Most people they sit out there and they panic a little bit because they say, "Oh well, how'd I get a hold of them?" And a buddy of mine that I've known for years and years and years says, "Give that phone number, call number down there every 5 minutes. 719-1490 is the call number down here." And I forget to give that. I've been doing radio for 31 years now. This program. That's the number one complaint. I won't give the phone number. And I says, you know what? I hate, like, info shows. You
right.
Know? Okay, you sell, I'm going to sell you a steering wheel. I'm going to sell you a steering wheel for $25,000. And with the steering wheel, I'm going to include a car.
I tell you what. You give the phone number and I'll remind everybody every 25 seconds. You got to call in every 20. You got 27 seconds, 26, 25.
Are you going to start a countdown on it?
You're going to have a start countdown.
Yeah, we're going to have. Yeah, you have to fight to get out of this building. Somebody could be lined up and kick crap out of us.
Right.
719-1490 is the number. And what I'd like to recommend is we go through this show and whatever I have planned normally doesn't happen. And there is so many things after reviewing my own notes for just 2020. We cover so many different parts of a vehicle, so many recommendations, so many different things and subjects that we cover. It's hard for me to keep up with it. So I'd like to recommend that you get your piece of paper, any piece of paper, back of an envelope, I don't care, and a pencil. And kind of do like I do, just run around with that thing in your pocket and that. And you can still do your chores and listen to your radio. And when you hear something that ticks and makes that you say, oops, oh, yeah, I need to ask him this, then you write the number down, 719-1490, and we'll try to remember to give it out to you. And give us a call down here. We'll be more than happy to give it a shot. Do we have a technical computer on board? Do you see any technical computers, Andrew?
Not in this room.
Okay. Do you see any technical computers?
Not
that's
here.
Javier.
Not here.
From Spectrum Minor Road Auto Collision, okay? So there's no technical computers in this room, right?
That is correct.
Okay. So if we give you the wrong answer, it's okay.
That's correct.
I have... What have we got? 8, 9 computers at the shop. We got 2 that I think it's 2 now that are dedicated technical data, and that's what you're going to find. Just but every good shop, Brian's got it over at his place at Automotive Specialist, and Dave and Missy's got it at PV Auto and Performance Center. They've got to information data. Javier's got about 15 of them, different ones for everything.
Yeah,
so
the ones we have actually do log in into the manufacturer's service, so that way we can get the upgrade, and we're able to scan every vehicle that comes in. And so every manufacturer from 2012, 15 on up, they're requesting that every car that we work on has a scan to see what the health scan is of that vehicle. So make sure that when you do have your car repaired at a collision center, that they do hand you a post and pre-scan, so that way you know what the heck is going on inside that BCM computer of yours. It's requirement. I bet you didn't know that.
Brian told me that there's some kind of a plug-in that computers have that automotive is going to now.
Correct.
Which one is that?
Well, it's been there for so many years, you can bypass the OBD2.
Yeah.
And that's where we go in through. And then we dial it in to a company out of California and also Austin, Texas. And what they do is they start going through all the modules in the vehicle. So most people don't think that, you know, I have one computer, two computer. The average computer in the car right now is about 32 to 38 computers on board. So, folks, you think
that's
Big Brother's not watching you? Think again.
What? No, it's a fact. I read something about, it must be 10 years now. And it said that the average person is photographed 47 times a day.
What?
Yeah. Photographed 47 times a day. And when you stop, think about it, when we walk into this building, we're photographed.
Correct.
When we walk out of this building, we're photographed.
Okay.
Okay. We probably walk down the halls and we're photographed. Okay. The only place you're not photographed, well, most places, is the toilet. So, but you go down, you see the news, you see I-10 photograph.
Correct.
Okay? And if you watch all of these cop movies like I do, you know, I love to watch them because I love to watch what technology they're using now, so that when I get busted, I can just say, yes, sir. Yep, knew you was coming. But, the technology that they have, I mean, you know, remember the old click, I got your picture, and I'll send you the ticket?
Right, exactly.
And it was better quality than you can get at a when you're filling out your passport. And you're driving down the road. Most of the time you're over the speed limit or you wouldn't get your picture taken. But, I mean, through the windshield of a car with no glare. And they can take a picture, and I'm looking at that, and the first thing I seen, and when I seen my picture there, I said, boy, that's a good picture.
I'm going to use it.
I'm going to have to start combing my hair better. You know, I know. I'm going to pull that sucker off and put it on my driver's license.
I wonder how many people got in trouble with a passenger they weren't supposed to be in there.
I have no idea. But all I know is you can't go any place without the cameras, the security cameras and stuff like that. So you figure if I'm running around Tucson one day a week, if I just run one day a week because I stop at so many places, I have to take my little redneck Palm Pilot. You know, my little – where's my redneck Palm Pilot?
What is it?
My little redneck Palm Pilot. This one. Okay. So if you want something to describe, there you go.
I mean,
if I wore bibbed overalls today, you'd be telling me that already.
No, actually, I was impressed. I didn't see you in your overalls this morning. So you clean up pretty good, Jerry. You must have known that was coming. Anyways, memo book. It's your hillbilly.
That is a redneck Palm Pilot. It is a spiral notebook. It cost about 97 cents at any of your places. Some of them are $1.29. And the batteries never go dead. You can take a pencil or you can take an ink pen. Be careful with the ink pen because the ink may run out. So what you have to do is you need to carry a backup ink pen or just carry a pencil, and then you can always trim it down with a knife that won't cut butter anyway. But you can beat it down to a point to where you can actually use the carbon in it to write. That way you'll have all this information for you, and it'll never let you down. Then You have to remember where you put the redneck palm pilot. You know, if you wear bibbed overalls, there's about 25 different options that you have.
And he's not kidding, folks. There is 25 pockets in that thing.
That's the reason it's got straps. Well, you see these people walking around, linemen, they've got these big straps on them. Search and rescue, most of the guys carry so much equipment. We have these big suspenders, these 2-inch suspenders that we use. And I'm going, this is just a lot of extra stuff that you have. So if you take a harassment, you can wear the bibbed overalls with your search and rescue shirt tucked neatly inside the front the overalls. And if you can stand the harassment and the being picked on, that's the perfect thing to have. I mean, you got pockets for everything. And plus, your pants don't try to fall off every time you move.
Right.
You know. Now, riding on a horse, you don't have that problem. You just sit there and, Levi's will stay up. But when you're getting down off of that thing, as soon as you jar when you hit the ground, and you've got radios and you've got everything hanging on your belts and stuff, it tries to pull your pants off. And seeing some of the people, because when we get to be of a senior age, I mean, we don't have a butt. You know, ask Jeff Foxworthy. He'll tell you. And so if you wear bibbed overalls, and anymore, I look for people wearing bibbed overalls. And I was going back to Carolina last year through the airport, and there was this guy, and he had his big bibbed overalls on, and they were Carhartt, same thing that I wear. And I asked him, I said, very few people that I meet in an airport are wearing bibbed overalls. And he says, yeah, you probably see more people, more old guys with their pants falling off than you do with bibbed overalls, huh? I said, actually, I do.
That's true.
And he says, I haven't found anything yet that works better. I've got suspenders. I've been wearing suspenders forever. And I was at a sale or something and picked up seen the bibbed overalls. And I thought, I'm going to try those. A lot of farmers use them back east and around the farms and stuff. And there's got to be a reason for it. Yeah, when you hang a pair of wire pliers on the corner of your pants in the back pocket, and one, they hang on the back pocket on blue jeans. They hang on the side pocket on bibbed overalls. So that leather seat that you have inside your vehicle, that's the reason. Not that I've ever done that now.
Jerry.
Screwdrivers. Yeah.
If you're wearing overalls and you're going through the airport, you're setting out every single alarm there is as you're going through the scanner.
I don't care. I went through Atlanta one time, and they people kept stripping me down, and I was down to a pair of Levi's. I am serious. And the guy said, you need to step back here in this room. And I said, I ain't going nowhere. I said, I'll bury it all right here in front of God and everybody. I'm not going back in that room. And they said, okay. And you know what it was?
What was it?
It was a little package of Tic Tacs. The aluminum inside the lid on a box of Tic Tacs. I'm going, and the lid had broken off. And when I cleaned my pockets, the lid didn't come out. Neither did the Tic Tacs. But I pulled the Tic Tacs out, but the lid stayed in there, and it had a little piece of metal in it. And I said, I can't believe I'm standing here in front of God and everybody at the busiest airport in the world because of a lid off a Tic Tac. And they just looked at me like, well, you didn't have any business buying the Tic Tacs. Well, I remember what my mama said. When you travel, you make sure you got clean underwear.
Right.
Because you never know. And I was one pair of pants away from Joe and everybody. You want to do a car show now?
Do not wear overalls as you're going through Atlanta. I'm just thinking all the buttons and everything. You were what? Setting everything off.
They just use a one. Use one.
But still.
But on the Levi's, they had that thing cranked up. They had that thing cranked up. I'm surprised they didn't make me open my mouth and look inside my mouth. So, it's just – but the people behind me, this is what tickled me. I'm standing there, and they must have thought this was some kind of a comedy show or something. They were sitting laughing. I mean, there must have been 50 people minimum in line trying to get through. I'm standing there right there. Nope, ain't going nowhere. And the people said, I said, there's nothing else metal on me. Can't you see? You don't need a scanner for this, buddy.
Right.
But no, it was kind of cool.
Oh, okay, fine. Jerry.
But anymore, when I go, you know, I wear the shoes, the little sandals that I can pull off, and you know, just slip out of them, and you know, you use your head instead of being such a jerk. You don't put on your big cowboy belt. It's got the big belt buckle. And, you know, I even told him, I said, I wear hearing aids. Is that going to be a problem? No, come on through. That's what they say now.
Right.
If I'd have been in Atlanta, I'd have been able to strip those out and put them in a special little jar or something. But Atlanta, yeah, that's one place I don't care to fly into. It is so busy, and this is not an exaggeration. I went in at the terminal. I got off, and I started bumping into people until I got back on the plane.
Wow.
At a different terminal. That's how busy it was. It looked like something you, it looked like, New York at lunchtime.
Oh, okay.
You know,
the Guardian.
All those people just shoulder to shoulder, butt to butt. You could not move without bumping somebody. I'm not kidding you. Everybody, excuse me. After about the first 5 minutes, that was the hell with it. They're used to this.
Yeah.
So. All right, now we were 719-1490. You've got anything you want to talk about this morning? You've done figured out it. Just because it's a car show don't necessarily mean we're going to start off talking about cars. But I think we did, though. We did mention something when we first started off.
That we did.
Anything, any questions you have? Now, we've got an expert of the number one paint shop in the state of Arizona for 2019, probably 2018, probably begin 2020. Any question that you have about a car, paint, the new paints and stuff, we're gonna ring him out this morning. We're gonna find out what's new coming out for the paints. You know, how do you keep the darn cars from blistering, paint coming off, peeling off, popping up, look like a cut, and then you pull the scab off of it. Anything you want to talk to Javier about from Spectrum Iron Road Auto Collision, 719-1490. Tires. I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about tires because somebody's not paying attention out there.
That is so true. Right now, you know, last week it dropped down to, 27, 30 degrees, and people were freaking out.
Yep.
Oh, my God, what is this like? So we would have at an average of 4 or 5 people coming in and saying, can you diagnose this? And I go, yeah, just keep driving it for another 20 minutes, and the light will go away. So.
No, it won't.
Oh.
I've got a diesel sitting out there at the house, and I'll tell you, I let the air out of it from 80 pounds down to 70 just so I could get from point A to point B.
Uh-huh. And what happened?
The light come on when it got cold. It didn't come on when I first lowered it down.
Really?
Yeah. And then it got cold, and it come down. And I'm telling you, it's within 1 pound of all 4 tires, the rears are. Light come on. Says low tire. And, of course, once that thing comes on in the dash, it is so big, you
right.
can be blind and see it. And that thing comes on, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to see if I can build it up. I can. I absolutely can. I can build it up from 70 pounds up to about 74 pounds, and you'd think the light would go off.
Right.
No. That darn light stayed on again, and it said, air up your rear tires to 80 pounds. It's very polite. I mean, just there it is. Air up your rear tires to 80 pounds.
Jerry, you're not listening
you
to
know,
me.
Make a U-turn at the next exit. And you're sitting there arguing with that voice. Oh, my Lord. But anyway. Yeah, and I can't.
Really?
So I'm going to have to put 80 pounds of air in that thing to shut it up. Now, I told you all that to tell you all this. Javier's way will work if you didn't lower it down to 70 pounds to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, you can drive it. It'll come back. The light will go off. Unless you are so close to the bottom of the parameter that you don't have that little wiggle room in there, which is about a pound. Then you're going to have some air put in. But when the tire pressure monitoring system, when it lights up, it'll depend on what year you got and what vehicle. Just go in and get your tire pressures checked on all of them. But remember, tire pressures are supposed to be added to and monitored and taken at cold tire pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will come up, okay? And then you'll check and say, Now, tell you a little secret. I'll tell you what I do. I check the tire pressure. If I'm too lazy to get out my compressor and plug it in and wait 10 minutes till it builds up about 120 pounds, what I'll do is I'll take my little redneck pompound I carry with me and a little gauge, and I'll check those tires. If they're 65 pounds, I said, okay, 65 pounds. I need to add how much to get them up to 80.
All right.
Okay, a genius can figure this one out. It's 15 pounds, all right? So I know that that's a cold setting. So I'm going to drive that son of a gun in town to one of the tire shops. I'm going to pull up and say, I want 15 pounds of air. The guy's going to look at me and say, Simmons, you have lost your... Just give me 15 pounds of air. That's all I want, 15 pounds. Put the gauge on it, give me 15 pounds, and shut it down. You sure? Yep. They'll give me 15 pounds on top of a hot tire, right?
Mm-hmm.
Next morning, I can get up and I can check it cold. I'm where I'm supposed to be. But you won't take 15 pounds. If you take 15 pounds, you better start looking for a leak, unless all of them are 15 pounds low.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people say, oh, well, it's the cold weather. Really?
No.
Are you sure? Mm-hmm. You know, I drove my Mustang the other day. I don't know who put the piece of cactus in the road, but I drove and I seen this little cactus here laying in the road, and I thought, oh, I need to move. Well, if I move to the left, I got a pothole over there big enough to take care of the Mustang. You know, I can put it in, just cover it up and say it never existed. But I hit the little cactus, the little teeny weeny piece of cactus laying in the darn road. And so I pulled in the house, and I'm thinking, okay, I better go take a look at this, because I know what cactus does. When cactus gets into a tire, you throw it away. It's that bad. They won't back out. Well, there was about probably 10 little spikes of cactus in there. And so I took a little pair of needle nose.
Uh-huh.
And what I was doing is I was trying to mark and remember how far inside that sidewall that cactus was. And so all but one come out really easy. The one was a little bit of extra pull. I said, okay. So now I don't know if it did or it didn't, but at least I'm going to know where it was. So when I pulled it out, I went and got my bottle of Dawn dishwashing liquid, right, with the spray in it, uh-huh, and I started spraying and watching for bubbles like we used to in the old days.
Right.
And no bubbles. I actually hit a piece of cactus and didn't take out a tire.
Wow.
I can't say that every time now. I've lost so many tires to cactus. All I can tell you, if you're going to run in cactus, now pay attention to this, because an old-timer told me this. That was before I was an old-timer. And it worked. People who do a constant amount of off-roading out in the desert, in the old Jeeps, hunting Jeeps and stuff like that, used recapped tires only. It's got a double layer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Recap.
Recap. You've got the caps and they grind, mm-hmm, them all off?
Right.
Well, they don't take that layer off. They just grind it down to that. So what happens when the cactus goes in, it hits that second thing, okay, and it doesn't penetrate it. Seen it. Actually, I ain't kidding you. I tore about everything you can tear up. And when you get an old Jeep, and I had an International Scout, a 60, mm-hmm, Scout, mm-hmm, and it was loaded with cactus, but it had recap tires on it for a reason.
Oh, okay.
And I get hold of needle nose and pull them out. And you'd pull them out, and you get them out so far, and you see the end of the cactus wasn't even there. It broke off between the layers. I would have never thought of that. How do you get them to vulcanize that tight on a recap? And they were recapped here in Tucson by Jack Ferrier's tire.
Huh.
But an old-timer told me about it. I did. You go run through cactus and everything else. Well, you know, it's a good habit to not have, especially if you're not going to be running recaps, because it will go through, and how in the world they actually penetrate a steel-belted radial, I don't know.
Exactly.
But they do. So if you're playing out in the boondocks, or you're going hunting or fishing, or you want to run around your property and, you know, knock down cactus with your truck, just remember, it could get very expensive, not for the paint and body, but for the tires. But, as I say, somebody's got a tire sale on somewhere, so you're good to go.
Wow, I never knew that, Jerry.
Hmm. Well, you learn something every time.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you, you hang around me long enough, I'll tell you something. What else do you want to know I've blown up? Okay, I used to race cars, and everybody listening to me out there that's ever raced a car knows they are not bulletproof. I don't care what you do to them. The only way they can be bulletproof if you leave them in the garage and not running. That's right. The only way, because the units are built to be abused, and we abuse them. And we learn over a period of time what little extra stuff that you have to do to a stock vehicle to make them where they withstand a little more abuse.
Correct.
You know, like suspension, the double shocks and stuff that everybody has out there now. And then, like, the differential housings where you put the axle trusses under them. Mm-hmm. All of this stuff is available. But people, they've never had it break on them before, so they never really think about it. You better think about it, because that's a lot of money when you break those things.
Right.
You can go down to you can go online to the 4x4 accessory parts, and you can get these axle trusses to put on the front axles, put on the rear axles. You can buy anything to beef it up. Now, you say, well, why do I need that? Why do you think the people made it? They know you need it from people breaking crap. And you break the stuff, they want to make it bulletproof so that when you do get out and you run across a rock and it breaks your housing and you bleed, you blow the axles out, break the axle off, drop all the differential gear lube out of it, and you fry your ring and pinion, that's about, right now, probably around $4,000.
Easy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the reason that you have these little things that you can build up. I've actually made axle truss. Actually made them. Stock cars.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, I made them. You take them, just take your torch and a lot of time and a grinder, and you can make that thing, and it looks so pretty under there, and it's bulletproof. I ain't kidding you. Then when you get ready to pull everything out, I mean, because it's about a two-day job to do it up when you first do it, and then you have to be very careful, because when you weld it on the differential, you have to remember there's seals, rubber seals inside the differential. When you melt a weld something to it, you have to stay away from that seal. You got to know where that seal is, and you actually mark it on the outside of the housing where it's going to be. Then you weld everything together, and you skip weld. You know, there was a four-wheel drive place up in Phoenix who used to sell a lot of lift kits. They kept me in business for probably 5 years.
Really?
They welded everything solid. You know, GM had that junk left front, and the frame rail we're talking about. Had, I'm sure you can see Javier sitting here bouncing his head saying, Well, he didn't. That's all right. We'll get that out on him eventually. But it's a little scab. You had to scab it, frame scab. They were so prevalent, we used to order the frame scabs by 12 at a time. You could order the little plates. You bring them in. And mainly because they were coming down from this four-wheel drive modification place out of Phoenix, and they were welded solid. Okay? You need to leave a little wiggle room in these things, because frames twist. Don't
they? Correct. Yes, they do.
You can go across a speed bump. And if you had cameras on the trucks, you would see where the move, because that most of them were C-frames, like a C, they got an open side, and they weren't boxed in. Then here comes the little foreign cars, Toyota.
Right.
All the had these bodies. Boxed-in frames, you know. And so all of a sudden it started catching on. Well, we used to put boxed-in frames, we used to box-in frames on Jeeps, to keep them from breaking off the spring perches on the front, the back side of the front springs, the one that goes to the rear. We've seen them come in from Mount Lemmon that was tied together with 5 bungee cords. And they drove that thing down the mountain from Mount Lemmon. They were going to the backside. They come in, and it was broken, and it was tied together with bungee cords. And they drove thing from Mount Lemmon to my shop. And I'm going, holy cow. But that's not the only one. But the Chevrolets that had the weak frame.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. We used to look at those. Everyone that came in, we looked at them, because you'd see a hairline crack. And when you can see the hairline crack, what you do is you go in, you strip everything off of the frame, which is the steering gearbox. Of course, you don't need the steering gearbox to stay in one place. You can always let it fall off. And then when you turn the corner on South Park Avenue to go into a resident, the frame, we told him, we put it in writing, made him sign it.
Okay.
Your frame will break completely off of this truck. When, we don't know, but it will break. We showed him. He says, oh, well, I should be able to get it home, and then, you know, I'll just go ahead. I said, okay. Turning into the driveway on South Park Avenue.
Guess what?
The whole steering sector fell off. Frame broke. Fell off. There was a telephone pole sitting right on the right-hand side as he made that turn. And guess what didn't straighten up, and guess who hit the telephone pole? Did that cost that guy a bunch of money?
His insurance company must have loved that one.
I'm not so sure he had that coverage. Well, he might have had liability coverage. But you need to inspect the older vehicles. Like, I've got a Mustang, and it's a 68. It's from Carolina, and it has some rust points on it. And Javier works on these things and tries to. How do you weld rust?
Well, we don't. It all depends the degree of rust that's on there. So with some panels, usually the rocker panels or the door panels, the outer, one of the things people forget to do today is clean out the drain channels on the doors. So when you're washing the car, make sure at the bottom of the doors you have front and back, and you see this little opening. That opening is where the water drains out. And back in the day, those things would plug up, and that's where you get all your rust coming from, at the bottom of the doors, especially with Fords and some Chevys. Chevys, the same thing. You would always find that. So we would tell people, just go ahead and get that lint collector, clean it out, and it should be okay. On most cases, we have to cut a new panel, and again, it all depending on the degree of the rust.
Yeah.
But if there is no, Ford is really good about having replacement panels.
Mm-hmm.
But on most cases, we just refabricate the lower rocker panel or the extension of the bedside. And then what we do is we go in with a kitty here and fiberglass and repair that rust on there. Now, is it 100%? No, but we usually, if we can get it to last at least 75% of the life of the mm-hmm. vehicle, then we're doing okay.
Well, it's my understanding that rust is kind of like cancer. You can't get it all once it starts.
Yeah, I used to say that, rust is like cancer, and then I was corrected by a medical doctor who goes, well, technology nowadays is that we do cure cancer. I go, okay, I have to use something else now. All right, so now we say, well, we make the best effort to attempt to cure your rust issues.
Oh, so you're like a medical doctor now. It's practice?
No, it's a practice.
You gotta love it.
Oh, you gotta watch gotta what love you it. Say to these people out there.
But oh, oh, I thought, don't we have a break or something coming up?
Phone number, Jerry.
719-1490. Write it down over here so you can give it to
him. Okay.
719-1490. Anything you want to talk about, it has something to do with automotive. Another thing I want to talk about is when we get back, something to do with the electric and the coatings that goes on the cars and some of the paint that I still don't understand fully because it's changing so fast. I don't have that coming in from body shop. I don't have the same information, technical data that you do. So that's we need to upgrade just a little bit. However, anybody have a phone question out there for us on automotive, 719-1490. Remember, Javier gets stuck with repairing these things, too. Probably more so than I do, because when you hit the front end, holy cow, it's done tore all to pieces. And then all of these computers, all of this stuff has to be redone. Air conditioning has to be fixed. So you have quite a bit of experience sitting here behind these two microphones this morning. We don't credit Andrew with anything but sitting over there laughing at us because he thinks we've done lost our mind anyway. But anyway, got to fill up the coffee cups. You're listening live to the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show right here on ESPNTucson.com, 1490 AM, 104.9 FM, and the phone number again is 719-1490. And we'll be right back. You ain't nothing but a hound. Well, All right, welcome back to the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show. Okay, I'm rejuvenated now. I don't think I can laugh any more than I laughed the first half of the show. However, it was fun. And me and Javier, we're just sitting here jawing on some stuff. On the older days, on the older frames, on the old vehicles, the weak points of them. You know, there's a reason you don't race unibodies. Even you can have a front stubbed in, like on the Chevelles and the Novas and stuff like that. Well, you crawl under and look, somebody's done figured it out. You need the back end joined to the front end. And so they put new rails and everything. They built it up so that it'll be stable. And people come back and say more questions. Well, why would you do that? Because the sheet metal is not heavy enough to handle the torque.
Right.
I've seen it too many land on the side of a racetrack, on the surface of the racetrack where they ripped them out. So, yeah.
You know, people are starting to understand the difference between a frame rail or a frame and a unibody. So just remember, all your late model vehicles, they're all unibodies. They're no longer frames on there. And, you know, the technology is there to keep people inside the vehicle at a heavy collision. And they're much safer.
Oh,
but
yeah.
If you have one of these big frame trucks, and you're going to be doing some serious hurting. But like you said, one thing that's really important for people to understand is when you said that frames actually flex, people don't understand, especially with whenever you get rear-ended on a truck, always look at the cab corners because that bed side is going to flex into the cab. And most people don't realize that. And here we are, we're telling them, okay, this is what happened. That's not right.
Nothing know happened. Your body shop. Know your body shop. Know your four-wheel drive shops. These guys will keep you out of a lot of trouble.
And we tell them, you know, this happened. The cab is, you know, it's no longer aligned. And they look at you like, okay, what planet are you from?
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, once we show them that these vehicles are made to constantly be moving, nothing is solid. That cap on a frame, it's, you know, you're just riding on suspensions and
Remember the old, I think it was the Ford that had the one piece?
Yeah.
You know, had the front and the back, and it's all tied together. There wasn't a separation of the...
Correct.
How'd they keep that thing from breaking in half? They didn't.
Just cross their fingers. It's like, how did you, you know, it's like, how can a Crown Victorias? Remember the Crown Victorias?
Oh, the one I cut up and made a race car out of? Yeah, I remember
yeah,
that
there
well.
You go,
so
right?
My buddies.
It's like, how can you not, the engineers, every time you got rear ended, guess what happened? It was like the Ford Pintos, remember? You got rear-ended,
don't
boom,
it
blew.
Don't Ford Pinto. That was an excellent car. That thing get about 25 miles per gallon.
Ford
you could
Pinto.
Push it off with a broken ankle, make it start when the battery was dead. That's a good car.
That was my first, that was my parents' first brand-new car.
Mm-hmm.
In Los Angeles, I was driving it because, you know, I'm driving it, and I'm all excited. And do you remember a department store called Zodi's? I still remember that because I'm making a left-hand turn, and this is when I learned not to make left-hand turns, right? So I'm waiting at a stop, and I'm waiting to make my left-hand turn, and here comes this truck. And next thing I know is, like, all of a sudden my parents are now joining me in the front seat. We got rear-ended so hard that we thought we were toasted, right? No, well,
literally toasted.
Well, the truck was so high that it missed the gas tank.
Yeah,
and from that point on, I'm going, okay, I believe in Ford Pintos, and it was a good thing. But those, again, engineering is like putting the gas tank right up against with a cross member. Any tap was going to blow up these things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's the reason you use fuel cells in race cars.
Right.
Yeah. I don't quite understand that. I mean, they have some problems with the later model Fords, the cruisers that mm-hmm. Highway Patrol were using. And people, there is, you can, if you want a car that's pretty darn safe to drive on the road, get a NASCAR. Just buy the NASCAR, put a windshield in it, put you some blinkers. Well, most people don't use them anyway. But, yeah, you're supposed to have blinkers. So put a set of blinkers in it and headlights and drive a NASCAR. This is where the advantage is. One, well, okay, they're safe. They got roll cages all the way around you. They'll stand a hit from a freight train, and they'll drag you down the track. However, you probably walk away from it. They have roll bars all the way around the sides. They have fire extinguishers inside the vehicle. They have gas tanks that are fuel cells, not tanks, and they got about a 500% safety rating on them, and you drive it on the road. Put a six-cylinder in it so you don't get caught up in an 800-horsepower going down the road. But that's the only way I know that you can stay out of a lot of trouble out here on the freeways. You take my Dodge truck, and you drive at 75 miles an hour down a freeway, and you hit a bridge abutment, that's going to leave a mark.
Yep.
If you hit a little smart car, okay? A smart car reminds me of you take a 2018 three-quarter ton, and you hit a smart car. That reminds me of playing croquet. You know, you take that big plunger, and you smack that little ball, and it just hauls.
Right.
That's what that reminds me of. Mike was coming back from Lake Havasu or way up north someplace, and he come through Phoenix there at the airport turnoff on I-10, mm-hmm. where a tractor and trailer had hit a smart car, and the smart car was up against another tractor and trailer. And Mike says, I don't think anybody got killed, but I'm not sure because the whole car was less than a foot wide from front bumper to rear bumper. I'm going, I don't even want to know.
Right, yeah, you know? I could not.
And he said, you would think that those cars, people would actually figure that out. Said, well, people still drive motorcycles, you know. You want to get hurt. I mean, they said, well, you can escape stuff on a motorcycle. I rode a motorcycle. I know what the escape value is, and I also know people can't see you. That's the reason they run with the headlights on, thank God.
When the smart cars first came out, one of them was involved in an accident. And the only person that can fix some mechanicals on this was a dealer up in Chandler. So the insurance company says, well, we need to get it up to Chandler. And I go, okay, fine. But the customer needs to get back home with it. So the only way that this car was going to get serviced is by someone driving it to Phoenix, right? So I figured insurance company was going to pay to have it towed, right? So I figured, you know what, $600, smart car, $600, what the heck, I'll drive it. So I decided to get on that smart car and go to Chandler in it. I should have paid a $600.
Why?
After two changes in my underwear and seeing every single truck, you're driving down the side. You're driving on your lane. Next thing you know, you're in the medium. Then next thing you know, you're on the outside. I was like, I finally pulled out.
Like driving a cotton ball with the wind coming by. Huh?
After I got it out there, they go, you drove it from where? I go, never mind. Just never mind. So we call the customer and go, your car's ready. You can come and get it up in Chandler.
Hey. I used to be a finance manager, and I was going up to relieve a guy from vacation time up in Phoenix. And I had my 71 Pinot. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, okay, I'll just drive, you know, cruise up there.
Right.
No biggie. I get out on the freeway, and I thought, you know, in NASCAR country, we draft. That means
right.
that you can draft. You can pick up an extra 5 or 10 miles per hour and probably 2-3 gallons, you know, for gas. So I got in behind an 18-wheeler. Well, I don't have a CB. They did. That two 18-wheelers caught me in the middle of that thing. At one time, that little Pinot was running almost 90 miles an hour. And I know 75 is stretching it. In fact, I don't think I'd ever had it over there. I looked down my speedometer, and I'm running 85. And I thought, well, I'll just pull out. And I'm thinking, wait a minute now. I drive race cars. I know how that works. So let's see if I can pull this off. And so I started easing out of lane. I'm talking about inches at a time, just moving on over until I got in that slipstream from that 18-wheeler. I thought, you talking about riding in a cotton ball? I was in one. I just eased it right. Well, I didn't really ease it back. I drove it back in behind that 18-wheeler to get the stability back. they finally were gracious enough to turn me loose just as we got in, just before the city limits. I have never had a trip like that to Phoenix, Arizona, but you talking about some truckers teaching me a lesson, it worked. Right. Never. I won't even put my big Dodge in behind one. And it just, you can't, it floats. Mm-hmm. It was actually, it felt like it was off the ground when mm-hmm. I was trying to get it back in behind that other one, because you're afraid to turn it too much that there's no resistance on the steering wheel. You go, oh, wait a minute here now. So I eased it back in, and I could tell exactly when I got out of the slipstream. Drop back down, oh, I'm good. Whew, boy, did I learn a lesson. Okay, guys, y'all just take me to Phoenix then. I could have taken my foot off the accelerator and just let them pull me.
Right.
It was that bad. But now I know why 18-wheelers don't like people behind them, and they have a way of showing it. So next time you decide to draft an 18-wheeler up there, buddy, if you can't see that guy in his mirror, you better not be back there, because once he figures out that you are back there, he can give you a ride that you will not like, especially if he's got a buddy coming up behind that has a CB. The only way you can figure it out is if you've got a CB and you're listening to both of them, and they say, okay, let's pin this idiot between us, and then you pull out right then. Don't wait. Don't second-guess him. Move.
Immediately. And, you know, these guys are bored, so they're always looking for something to do out on the road. So they're looking for us.
Yeah. You know, and most of them, they have good – their license, their CDL license, they are – that's the way they make their living. They're not going to do anything what I would call stupid. They are so smart. They know what works and what doesn't work. They know that you can't stick a 71 Pinto with 72 horsepower between two 18-wheelers that's got about 1,000 horsepower apiece, and all the time in the world, and then the devil's up in front and said, let's take him on down the road. You know, that's something a movie's made of. Don't try it anyway.
Nope. What's the phone number?
719-1490. 719-1490. We sure did get sidetracked, didn't we?
Oh, boy.
All right. How about we talk about the Tesla you were telling me about earlier. Tesla is an electric vehicle, very popular. And they can't build it anymore because they don't have any parts?
And that's right. They started mass producing these trucks to compete with some of Toyota's vehicles, but they're running into some issues, and there's not enough batteries to go around, so they're going to have to hold on the manufacturing of these vehicles, which
on the trucks or the cars?
On all of them now. Yeah. So basically, mass producing these cars, now it's becoming an issue. So the question now, it's going to be, how safe are the future batteries, since they're going to be mass produced? They're going to be. So really consider, you know.
Firewall and a parachute, buddy.
Right. But that's about right. I mean, nothing about saving the environment. And one of the things that people come in with their vehicles and they ask us about batteries versus gasoline, electric cars versus gasoline. And I just tell them they're so concerned about emissions. What they don't picture is what happens to that battery after it gets replaced. Where does it go? Where does it get stored? So I'm going to end it there because I want them to look at it, and they're going to get a shock. They're going to be shocked on actually a battery that has been pulled out from one of these vehicles mm-hmm. will do more damage to the atmosphere than emissions. I'll leave it alone.
Oh, well, I remember that when the batteries, they started reconditioned batteries, and people's out there buying batteries, and then you were having to pay to get rid of them and stuff like that. There was a couple of hot sites down in Alabama, I think it was, where they used an old silo. And for people that don't know what an old silo is, it was a silo that they used to dig out in the ground. They used to dig out in the ground. They used to store silage, which is ground green corn cut up to feed cattle with. And so they had these long trenches dug out. We had one on our farm, and it was about, I'm estimating, probably 60, 70, 80, no, it's probably 100 feet, 120 feet, something like that. And it was about 8 feet deep. Well, they found a silage pit in Alabama. They were having some contamination in the rivers down there. So they tracked it back, and they found an old silage pit that a guy was buying batteries. I mean, it'd be like me paying this guy to pick up my batteries from the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And he was getting these batteries, and instead of properly disposing of them, he just put them in the ground. He didn't dump the acid out or anything like that, or rip the plates out and recycle or anything like that. He just set the batteries in the ground, filled it up, covered it up. And then they started leaking, going out in the rivers. And then when they got ready to find the guy, he was no place to be found. That guy had gone. That was a couple of those big EPA sites. The others are the way they used to handle transmission fluid and oil mm-hmm. and stuff like that. They used to oil the roads. Got a newsflash before everybody's brain falls out there. The county used to use oil on dirt roads. Okay?
To pack down the dirt.
To pack down and keep down the dirt and stuff like that. That was what they used to do. And then they found out, it goes, whoops. And so now they come up with all the environmental stuff, and here we go. And it wasn't anything wrong with the technology at that time. People just didn't know, mm-hmm. you know, and there's no law against being ignorant.
Right.
And once they found out what it did, I remember walking behind a car dealership in Tucson, Arizona, on top of the drain, behind a place of business, because I seen some orange behind it. It was transmission fluid. And they were draining, they were pouring the transmission fluid out on the ground outside the fence. When I walked across that thing, I didn't know that it had saturated that far. The ground, you could actually bounce on it. You could bounce on the ground. Okay? It must have been moving a good inch and a half.
Right.
But I'm going, holy cow. But anyway, they got that all that cleaned up. But I remember when all this was taking place and everybody's getting excited about it. They should have been, because this stuff normally goes down, and with transmission fluid, diesel fuel, all of that stuff, I mean, you just have to pay attention to what you're doing with it. That's what EPA come in and started doing. Well, they got a little carried away on some of it, too. But if you look at it, okay, you know, I was inspected, and they said, we can't believe it. Your place has been around here this long, and it's this clean. I said, well, there's called enzymes that you can buy that actually eats oil. You mm-hmm. know it. I know it. Well, I don't like to walk around in oil. I don't like to have it on my shoes. Don't mm-hmm. like to have it on britches. Don't even like the way it smells, actually. And so I was using this enzyme stuff religiously. Oh, my goodness gracious alive. It cleaned up my, because I have a septic tank. It mm-hmm. cleaned everything. And I'm telling you, I was tested.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out clean because I've been using this stuff forever.
Oh, my God.
So that stuff does work. But people who just take the oil, when you get it out, you can take it to, you can take it down to a AutoZone.
Mm-hmm.
You can bring it to Simmons. You can go to PV Auto and Performance Center. You can take it over to Brian's. And we have regular oil collection that comes in and picks it up. And we'll just dump it in the tank. And, yeah, we have to pay for it, but it's not that, you know, it's
part of doing business.
Part of doing business. So don't dump your oil out. Will it keep weeds down? Yep. So will you know your weed killer?
Right.
And that's, it's a little safer. It doesn't penetrate the ground down as far as it does. It just goes after the weeds and kills it down. So don't use it to do the dirt. You don't need to do the dirt with it. You know, you can buy gravel at any gravel place and get to 3/4. The one is for driveways. That way, when you drive on it, it's cut so it'll compact down.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can stay away from all that crap, and then your place won't be looking like a old junkyard used to look where they drained everything out. Boy, that's another one that got some heavy, heavy expense of cleaning that stuff up. I know one. I've known three wrecking yards that actually closed
because
they couldn't afford
that.
To clean it up. No, it was millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they used to just drain it. Oh, okay, let's drain this right here. Then they go out, and there'd be. Well, that stuff goes down 5, 8, 10 feet, something like that. Nasty.
Almost to the water table.
Almost to the water table, and then it'll rain. And then it picks it up, and then it takes it on down. And so, you know, oh, my gosh, here we go. But as far as What are we running out? Oh, we run out of the first hour, huh? Well, I guess I'm out of the first hour. All right, 719-1490. And we'll talk about anything you want to talk about on our second hour. You know, don't be afraid to call us, 719-1490. We're going to get into some new paint that's out. It's no cure. We'll be right back after these messages.